This episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which I was lucky enough to head out to Barcelona and see being unveiled at its launch, and to chat to athletes like Sharon Nakidi, who won the New York Marathon a few years ago, who does all of her easy and steady runs in this pair of shoes. And then we've set Jess from the Running Channel a very specific challenge to train for 12 weeks for her fastest, hopefully ever, 10K, which is also back out in Barcelona.
Yeah, she is loving training in this shoe. And I think it's important as well, because we're so lucky we get to test lots of different shoes, but we do know that some people just want that one pair that will do everything. So Jess has been doing her long runs, interval sessions, and she will be tackling the final 10K in the Under Armour Infinite Elite shoes.
Yeah, big focus on endurance and a brand new foam, which provides extra energy return and looks after you on even your longest runs. So if you want to know more, head to the link in the show notes.
This is the Running Channel podcast with me, Sarah Hartley, Rick Kelsey in the corner pressing buttons, and he's just finished yodeling, so mm-hmm. be glad that you didn't have to listen
to that.
Vocal
warm-ups.
And Andy Bradley, who's still cold.
Yes, I'm cold. Always cold. Mm-hmm. Still cold from the weekend.
Really?
It was we'll come on to it in a minute. The worst conditions I think I've ever run in, and that's saying something.
What, boggy?
No, just sleet, freezing cold wind chill. Yeah, a gale force, it was awful. It was awful.
Why'd you go out?
It's being a wuss. It was just a light breeze.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. But we're getting ready for the summer, I suppose, because today we're going to be talking about our favourite track workouts. You don't have to do them on track. You can do them anywhere. Mm. These are our favourite interval sessions that you could use to get faster at any event broadly. So we're going to be talking our way through that. So maybe we should get stuck in.
Let's speed into it.
So interestingly, during our sound check, Rick referred to himself in the third person. He asked himself to do a sound check.
Oh, I did, yeah. No, I said, Andy, count to 10, and you count to 10. Yeah. Then I said, Sarah, can you count backwards from 10? And you counted backwards from 10.
Yeah.
And then I said, Rick, just get to 5 if you can.
And
then
and he got to 3.
He got to 3 and went, yeah, that's fine.
Which is
that's
fine. It's an all-time best.
It's all fine. Hey, I am prime this morning. You know why?
Why?
Because you put caviar on your face?
I did put caviar on my face.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Guess what I did this morning?
Went for a run?
Yeah.
You too?
Yeah, I went for a run.
Is it your first time you've ever run before the podcast?
Before work, yeah. I don't normally run before work.
Yeah. Do you count this as work?
50, comme si, comme ça.
Yeah, fair enough.
Depends how annoying we are.
Yeah. I think if anyone saw you doing this, I don't think they'd count it as work.
No, you're probably right. Anyway.
You just press both buttons.
I got up. It was stunning in London this morning.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I ran one of London's amazing parks. And I was just thinking how amazing this city is. And then I thought, how amazing is this city, actually? Oh, and no. According to one UN source.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Oh, you just there get was so one, close to being
it's
interesting.
It's so green. It's right. So green, London, that yeah. Actually one UN paper said it could be described as a forest. There are so many trees in London that if every single one of the 9 million Londoners who live in this great city
yeah.
decided to hug one, they could have one each.
There's 9 million trees in London.
Yeah.
That can't be true.
Well, there are at least 9 million.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. This does sound like another
Sorry.
Rick Kelsey fact.
No, this is all, this is all true.
No,
this
let's
is
just,
all true.
Let's just unpick that a second. No. So one, there's no factual evidence that it could be described as a forest. Like technically...
One UN paper at some point said it could be described as a forest.
Yeah, was it a UN paper? When did the UN get founded? Is this from a long time ago?
UN got founded a while back.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's the same as like walking down the street with your nan and her going this could be a great... Theater.
Oh, it's like a tropical paradise.
Hang on. If you compare London to most cities, it's an incredibly green.
Destination. Yeah.
No, you two have got to agree with me on this. If you compare London to many major cities, New York, LA, San Francisco, yeah. Paris, Berlin, Sarajevo.
I don't know.
Oh, Paris is pretty green.
Not as green as London.
The Bois de Vincennes and then the Bois de Boulogne. Like
no, we have our parks.
All right, French.
I think our parks take up the same amount as the, you know, tarmac there is. I'm not sure about that.
The best thing was I looked you directly in the eye.
You just got less and less momentum.
I'm not sure about that one. Anyway, to add to my morning, I found one of these. Right, do you know what these are?
Is it some kind of like fruit
it's
shot
It's a ginger
thing?
Shot. Are you going to do it right now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Well, I've already done one.
Just before you,
I did think
you're
you had
doing
some
another
good
one.
Yeah.
Just before you dig in, I would like you, without reading the bottle, to give the benefits of doing a ginger shot.
Tastes nice, looks good. It's got pepper in it.
Does it actually have pepper in it?
It wakes up your day. It's got cayenne pepper.
There's probably as many facts in that little three facts you gave.
If you remember from a few episodes ago, Rick hasn't had a cold since he was 18.
That's true. So maybe he's something to.
No. Down in one. Oh.
I remember watching something.
That's a big one.
Oh, that's great. Is it? That is seriously good. Oh, the kick.
I remember watching
the pepper. Go in your cheeks.
Wow, I think this is the closest I've ever seen to your face moving.
I still can't tell if he's happy or sad. No. But hearing where the phrase ginger, like to be gingered up or ginger up.
It's good for you, isn't it? Ginger.
Yeah, but there's a phrase, right? You can ginger someone up or ginger something up.
Mm. What does that mean?
Like, as in to get them ready to go.
Oh, right.
But I think this could be a Rick Kelsey fact.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I can't remember where I heard it.
Stop with this Rick Kelsey fact.
Okay, so this could just be a fact.
Who's interviewed the last six prime ministers?
Well, that might not be true. We don't know.
It's going to be well awkward when a new prime minister
gets... Might be on the show reel. Might be easy to find out.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think the phrase to ginger something up or ginger someone up is because they put ginger up a horse's bum to make it go faster to make it behave in a certain way.
Okay, this
parades.
Is taking a new angle.
Yeah. Right, Rick, do you have another one of those?
Well, I've already had two because I bought two. So I was so excited that they were in the shop. So I go into the shop just before we start the podcast every week. Uh-huh. And I go to the top shelf where they keep the ginger shots with cayenne pepper and turmeric.
Just by habit, you always used to go to the top shelf for the newsagents.
Yeah. Okay. Every single... That's a time reference.
Yeah.
Sarah doesn't know what you're talking about. What? Sarah doesn't know what you're talking about.
I don't understand.
Well, back in Andy's day, they had top shelf magazines.
Oh,
yeah.
Funny. When you didn't have the internet.
Yeah.
Sorry, can't relate.
Yeah, so anyway, I go in every week and I would say less than 1 in 10 chance of there being a ginger shot.
Well, because they sell out.
I'm so sorry to anyone who is watching or listening to this. This is awful.
It's got out of control. Should we talk about some running?
Yeah. Anyway, that was tasty. Thank you.
But I think the main story was that you ran before coming to the podcast, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, beautiful morning.
How far did you go?
Just 6K.
Nice.
Yeah, beautiful morning. Absolutely stunning.
I seem to remember that's Colin Jackson's favourite distance, which...
Oh yeah, we've spoken to Colin Jackson for the upcoming TRC meet, so keep an eye out for that. It's very exciting.
Little cheeky plug there.
Yeah, it is, to talk to him about something really unexpected as well. We didn't talk to him about what you might expect. You know, he's been to 4 or 5 Olympics. He was a world champion, world record holder, but we hardly talked about any of that stuff because he had loads more interesting things to talk about.
Mm, my favourite section was him. I wasn't there. I was just listening to you guys doing a wonderful job, but listening back to it, my favourite thing was him talking about 6K runs, and have a listen because he talks about it not in a way that you would expect. But Andy, how's your week of running been?
I ran Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Gosh.
Whoa.
I know. It's more of a reflection on a poorly planned week. than on dedication.
Someone left it all to the last
Yes, I did. So I'd done a run on Tuesday and then I was like, oh, Wednesday, no. Oh, Thursday, no. Okay, yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's what I've got left. But I had an interval session on Friday morning in sleet and gale force winds. And I run in a particular location and I should know better, but the whole of Bedfordshire, I think, is windy. But there is a massive wind turbine there, so it's always windy. So it was 2 degrees, but feels like -3 with the wind chill.
Oh.
And then it was sleeting into my... And then I had a hat on and my hat got so wet that I couldn't work out whether it was better to have the hat on or off because I was getting brain freeze from the actual... I was doing 800 meter efforts on sort of a well-groomed trail.
Mm.
And when I finished each one, I literally was pressing the heels of my hands to my forehead, screaming. I was in so much pain from the brain freeze that I was getting.
Those are the types of workouts I wish we filmed because that would be a cracking video.
It was disgusting. And then I had a very wet, again, 10-mile run on Saturday.
Nice.
And then Sunday was much more enjoyable. It was cold, but it was beautiful, no wind. So that was much better. I had like a threshold intervals on Sunday.
Yeah, the weather's on the turn, I feel.
Yeah, it's coming.
It's coming. Yeah. Spring is coming.
I had a similar experience.
You had a long one, didn't you?
So Friday morning, very wet interval session, very, very wet, which I'm going to talk about in a second because it was a great one. And then Sunday, I had my longest run so far, longest in terms of like distance.
During this marathon cycle.
Yeah, sorry, during this marathon cycle, longest, but also the longest amount of time that I've spent running at my desired,
pace.
Still a little bit out of reach, pace, which was very fun. So
what is your desired pace?
My desired pace is anywhere between 5 minute to 505 minute kilometers.
Oh, you said anywhere in this really tiny range
in
of
that
pace.
5 second gap. Anywhere or in like 455 to 505, basically. So I did 6K warm up, ran to Hyde Park, then 5.5K in, I was like, I really need a wee, and there was a toilet.
Perfect.
And then just as I got there, the card machine broke, so it should have cost me 20p, but the person just let me in anyway.
Winning.
Nice. And then
did
I did another.
Did you pause your watch?
Did pause my watch.
Yeah.
Then I did 500 meters just to get back into it. Then 20K at marathon pace,
yeah,
which was a lot. And then a nice little 4K cool down back down.
So I wasn't doing the maths as it went on. How far was that in total?
30K.
30K, good effort, because we've got 7 weeks almost exactly. That would have been just under 7 weeks. Sorry, yeah, just over 7 weeks to go is when you did
And
that.
What I love as well is that I haven't actually done that many marathon build-ups where the long runs have been paced. But yeah, I actually love, I like that run, so lovely, because it's so split up. You're not just like, right, okay, I start, I do 30K and then I stop.
Yeah.
And then, but this week's one is just 32K at a comfortable pace.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go trail running.
Oh, nice. Oh, it'll take you a lot longer though.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Time on feet. And that's what I missed out in my marathon training, because it was for the first time. I did a lot of my long runs at a race pace or close to race pace, which meant that they're really good quality, but actually I hadn't spent enough time on my feet.
On your feet.
So, because my longest run was 2 hours, 15 minutes.
So how long were you out? 2 hours, 15?
That's so annoying.
Your longest run was 2 hours, 15?
Yeah.
So Sarah, how long were you out for on your long run?
Well, including the toilet stop, like elapsed time, it was like 2 hours, 50. But running time, 2 hours, 37, which is a 30K PB.
That's amazing.
It's hard to, you know, when you're planning your marathon, it is hard because you've got to, if it's normally Sunday, put away 3 hours.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. This is what I would like the record to show, is that usually I am a right like boring person when it comes to like big long runs like this. Like the weekend is clear. I will spend Saturday getting everything done that I need to do. Yeah. Then Sunday I will wake up early and go on a long run. And like, that's it. That's the weekend. This weekend, didn't have a choice. There was like loads of, or I did have a choice, but there were loads of social things that I wanted to do. So I actually saw Andy at the varsity rugby match.
Yes,
on
we
Saturday.
Saw each other in at the rugby on Saturday.
Yeah,
you saw each other socially.
Not on purpose.
Not on purpose.
Right. Okay, sorry.
we're both very clear about that.
Both happened
it was
to be there.
You accidentally went to the same event.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So Andy used to. Well, went to Cambridge.
Yeah.
My mate goes to Cambridge and she didn't play, but she was on the team.
I don't think you hung around with the same kind of people, though. Andy just hung around with the guy in the library.
Brilliant.
We've covered this on the podcast. He made the choice. It was athletics, social life, or academia.
Fair enough.
You can only have two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. And I just chose one, just academia.
You picked your future. You did well.
But yeah, so I did that. And then another person who's running London Marathon, they were doing a charity fundraiser, which was sick. They hosted a DJ night, which is incredible. So I went to that Saturday night, only on alcohol-free ciders and beers, though, in order to prepare
for Sunday.
Sunday.
Oh, that's very pro.
But then I still, this is the thing though, I don't think drinking obviously does make a difference, but like I woke up Sunday morning and because I'd gone to bed later and like had a lack of sleep, it just makes you realize a hangover is really down to tiredness.
It's down to sleep. I had a couple of bottles of Gavi on Saturday night, but I went to bed at 9:15, so I was absolutely fine. Sunday, got up and nailed it.
Nice.
A couple of bottles just on your own.
I had some friends.
Did you?
Down the road. Next door sounded like they were having a good time.
Was it a couple of bottles of Gavi with the previous six prime ministers? in your summer house?
No, I was at a two-year-old's birthday party, you know.
Classic heavy drinking. Oh my goodness. Right, Rick always wraps us up before we get to talk. Yeah.
Let's talk about our track workouts.
So track workouts, favourite speed workouts. Yeah. Who wants, should we talk about why? If you're listening to this right now and you might be out on a run and you might just be running easy distances, why should people be throwing in speed?
Because they should have, every run should have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of each run should be ideally a little bit different to give you that variety during the week. So the purpose could just be that you're getting back from injury or you're getting fitter, so you might just want to be building up your running. But once you've done that, then we'd be saying that one of your runs each week should be an interval session, and running at a pace which is faster or at least as fast as your desired race pace over a certain distance gives you that kind of string to your bow in your armory of paces, so that when you come to run a half marathon, if you've been doing interval sessions at 10k pace, half marathon pace feels easy, and then that kind of translates across all of the distances. And the track is the most controllable place to do exact distances, to know your exact pace. You're not worried about GPS interference of woods or buildings. You're not worried about gradients or anything like that. You've got a nice flat surface, you know, exactly every lap's 400 meters. Although Sarah still sometimes listens to her watch and will stop an 800 meter rep when her watch tells her, not when the track, which is physically 400 meters long, tells you that two laps is 800 meters.
Didn't do that this week, but yes, I will sometimes do that. I'll keep running to the line.
Yeah.
Just more casually than I had done previously.
So yeah, that's why we should be doing, like, we're talking about intervals, interval sessions, but then specifically the ones that we have enjoyed doing on a track. But if you are listening to this and want to try them out, don't have a track close to you, then you can use your watch to measure or just, you know, approximately pace it out or measure it out on a map in advance.
I personally love finding which, like, within the neighborhood where I live.
Yeah.
If you can do, like, because the key thing with intervals as well is the reason people go to the track as well is you don't want to have to do a road crossing.
Yes.
So it's a great way of working out, is your local park or is like an island of houses where you can just run on the pavement and you don't have to cross the road.
Yeah, just around the block. How far is that? Yeah. And how many lampposts is it to run 400 meters?
So many times I've done like, oh, this must be 400 and it's like 250.
Yeah. It's also flat though as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you've got the benefits of flat and set distance and no traffic lights.
And it's less cambered. That's really annoys me with pavement running.
Yeah.
Just the slope down for the rain drop off.
Yeah, I agree. And we've done a whole episode on track etiquette, because going to the track for the first time can be a little bit scary. Mm-hmm. And what everything, you know, what to be prepared for. But assuming that everyone is not too scared of the track, which we'd encourage you not to be, and you've headed down there, then our favourite workouts, I guess, which are all for different distances because each of us has a slightly different bent when it comes to the running that we enjoy.
We should maybe do another episode on track running because
I have
a picture from a track in the UK, which is a whole A4 piece of paper worth of rules, and we only had three, so maybe we should go through
one of them. Was shout track at slower runners in lane one.
Absolutely not.
The only thing
you need to know about lane one is just don't walk in it, please.
You don't walk in it, don't stop in it. If you're doing a hard effort, doesn't matter what pace it is, you've got every right to be there.
Yeah. Favorite workout, can I go first?
Yes.
Pyramids.
You're very excited. Oh, pyramids.
I love a pyramid. I tell you why I love a pyramid, because it really challenges you to pace the first half of the session really well, but it also makes it so easy to go a little bit faster in the second session. So if you've never done a pyramid workout before, basically you work your way up to the top of the pyramid and then you work your way back down. So an example of one that I did last week was I did 200 meters, 400 meters, 800 meters, 1200 meters, 1600 meters, and then 12, 8, 4, 2.
Yeah.
Back down.
So exactly the same down as up.
Yeah.
You don't usually repeat the one at the top.
Yeah, so the one at the top is
1600 meters, so four laps of the track.
Yeah, that's a mile.
Right. So, what's the gap in between each one?
So I had the rests change slightly, but I think it started off between the shorter distance, it was about a minute. And then as it got a little bit longer, I think it was like a minute and 15 seconds.
And keep walking.
Still pretty short.
Yeah, pretty short.
Pretty dependent on the pace that you're running. So if you're trying to do the workout that Sarah's talking about at like 5K pace or faster, then I think you need longer recoveries than a minute.
Yeah.
But depending on your level of experience as well.
Do you keep walking though in the recovery?
I would always keep moving in a recovery. Yeah, that's something we don't talk about that much, but at the very least walk, you know, you want to, everyone wants to put their hands on their knees or their hands behind their head to kind of get that little bit of recovery. But you will recover better and be ready to go again if you keep moving. So ideally jog, it's really hard to do, but as a pro, we would have jogged every recovery.
Really?
And it was, but like,
as not pros though, it's fine to walk.
Absolutely, yeah. Walking is better than doing nothing.
I walked during that session.
Yeah. But you did a minute after 400 meters and then 2 minutes after 800 meters.
Yeah.
And then 3 minutes after 12. Did you 1200?
Yeah, so I did 12. So mine was all, I don't think I had a rest that was longer than 90 seconds. Okay. But I was, because that was a marathon session that I was doing, so all of my paces were the maximum kind of 200 meter effort was at just faster than 5k pace. So all of mine were like 10k half marathon paced efforts. So my rests were a little bit shorter. It was really good.
Take me next time.
Yeah, we should go do it together. Because it's fun, because as soon as you get to, so that kind of 1600 meters in the middle, mile effort, once you've finished that, you're over halfway. So I really like in an interval session how just by doing one rep, you tip from under halfway to over halfway. Like you're well into the second
half. Yeah, if you're doing six times something, it's quite hard, because the third one, once you finish the third one, you're exactly halfway.
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, you go from very quickly in your pyramid session from being, oh, it's not even halfway to, oh, I'm over halfway. I've broken the back of this.
Yeah.
We always used to have that expression here. We've broken the back of this. It's downhill from here.
Yeah.
I remember doing this in cross country training at school where you did it. sixes, a pyramid of sixes. So it was kind of just a 50 meter sprint. So you'd do six 50 meters there, and but you'd go up to six and with a like 15 second, 20 second, 25 second gap in between each one until you're back down to one. And that was just an all out.
Yeah.
As fast as you can go.
Do you see what that's teaching you as well, though, is the reason that the pyramid then works its way back down and the sprints get faster is it's teaching you how to get that sprint finish on tired legs. So if you are training for, you know, like picking up, even in a marathon, the pace, if you want to run a completely evenly paced marathon, it's still going to feel harder and it's going to feel like you're going faster in that last 10K, even though you're going exactly the same pace that you ran in the first 10K, you're having to work harder because you're so tired. So that's when it's good to go like, oh, I've run, like that whole session I think was about 12, 13 kilometers.
Right.
So I'd done 10Ks worth of kind of speed work by the time I was on that last 200 meter rep. But then it's like, okay, can you unlock that faster pace for that last little bit?
Yeah.
So good.
It's interesting. The pyramid, the psychology of the pyramid, what you've just described, you should be getting quicker as the distances come down towards the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the mentality of kind of getting over the hill and then coming down the other side is really powerful. Conversely, it can be like a really mentally challenging thing to do, which can be good for your running to do something. You know, we've talked about not necessarily on the track, but a fartlek workout where it's 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute, 5 minute, five minute, 4 minute, 3 minute, 2 minute, 1 minute. You can do that as a pyramid like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go 5-4-3-2-1, 5-4-3-2-1, which is kind of the most common way of doing it. But if you want to make it really difficult, do it the other way. Go 1-2-3-4-5, 1-2-3-4-5, because that's absolutely soul destroying mentally.
Yeah.
But if you can get through it, like, I guess, be aware of the psychological training that you can do in a, in an interval workout, because that's ultimately what you're trying to do.
I'll take
it's
the easy
the
route
diligence
first.
At the start of like, I 100% if I was doing 1-2-3-4-5, that one would be way too fast. Because I'd just be like, right, off we go.
Yeah, and you put a lot of lactate in your legs in that early 1 or 2 minute effort, and then you've got another 30 minutes of hard effort to like try and clear it out. So that's tough. And on the on my longer run on Saturday, I ran with a really lovely group local to me, and they were chatting about one another's strengths. It was quite a lot of banter between them about it. They'd recently done an intervals session, and one of the guys was like, I can't believe it, this guy over here, we were supposed to run, you know, whatever it was, 4 minute K's, and he ran 4 minutes, 4:01, 3:59, 4 minute. How does he do it? I was running near, and you could see the frustration on the other guy's faces. They were like, yes, you were yo-yoing around with your pace. And we used to have, this is the bit thing, that single thing I miss the most about my athletic career. At most times I had an amazing training squad wherever I was training in the world. Some of my closest friends, there'd be usually four or five of us doing a workout together.
Mm-hmm.
And we would be on the track. And if you imagine the team time trial or the team events in the cycling, where they're tucked in a single file, four bikes all behind each other perfectly, and then one swings off the front and lands onto the back again.
Yeah.
That we had that perfect routine. We didn't even have to say anything. Beforehand, we was like, you've got the first lap, you've got the second lap, you've got the third lap. So if you're doing a mile and there's four of you, you've each got a lap each. And we would just perfectly tick off the pace that we're supposed to run. Then if I'd done the first lap, I would literally just move out into lane two. Everyone else would come along inside me and I would slot in on the back of that group. And then we would all just, and it was, I miss the kind of clockwork perfection, the satisfaction in that,
nailing it. Yeah.
That we could, when we were in really good shape, we could have done that without watches on. We were clocking our time, but we could have, Andy, my coach, could have said, right, this one, we want to do a mile in, I don't know, 4:32. So it's 68 second laps. So just go and run 68. And we could have done it without, apart from one of my training partners who, it didn't matter what distance we're running. If we're running a 400 meter effort hard or a 2K or 2 mile effort on the track where we're supposed to be going relatively easy, he still ran 30 seconds for the first 200 every time. it didn't matter. So that was just, he had one pace. It's like, I'm gonna bank some time. And then there's like a 50 meter gap as we're just sat off him waiting for him to come back to us like, as he slows down.
Off he goes.
You know, you just mentioned watches there. How much did you use your watch when you're doing that? Because you don't, if you're on the track, you don't need your watch as much, do you?
You don't,
well,
but
you don't
I
need the pace, I wouldn't have said, because I would be doing the math as I went around. I would know, you know, what my times through 200 and 400 were on each.
Whereas I use that, I'm rubbish with tracks. Still don't really know, apart from
what the lines are.
Still don't really know what all the lines mean, not going to lie. No, I know where the finish is. I know where the 200 meter line is on the opposite to the finish.
Yeah.
You know, the other,
you know what the
other two. I know what the numbers do.
Yeah.
I can count to eight.
I would have been one, only wearing a stopwatch, not a GPS watch. Like,
yeah,
I'd have been wearing
watch.
An old-fashioned watch because
for the recovery,
for everything, just because it was. I didn't need. I knew where the splits were, so I didn't need GPS because the track's 400 meters long. But I would have in certain reps been clocking my, just having a quick glance every 100 meters to know exactly how fast I was going.
I had a question about this.
Yeah.
And this is perfect because you're old enough. When you just had a stopwatch.
Yeah.
And you weren't running on the track.
Yes.
How did you know how far you'd run?
I didn't care how far I'd run.
Yeah, Andy's.
But this is what
bothered about that stuff.
This is what I was thinking. Like feels. before, basically, I have a mate who's running Brighton Marathon, and they had an absolute shocker long run. Their like headphones died, then their phone died, and their watch died. So they had no idea how far they'd run. They needed to do 30K.
Sounds great.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so true. Like if you say you needed to go out and do a 10-mile run, like which like, you did most, or like a half marathon most Sundays.
Yeah.
How did you know how far?
So. That is a really good question, to be fair. Like all of my runs when I was competing professionally were set by time. So I'd run an hour and then...
But then you wouldn't know.
But I'd have just counted an hour as 9 miles. And then I'd have counted an hour and a half as 13 miles.
But then how did you know?
Because I knew roughly, like you could measure them on a map. Physically on a map.
But this is what I just find it so funny how now people are like obsessed with rounding precision. That. Like Carla Molinaro had a 3-hour long run over the weekend, and I saw her on her Instagram being like, why is everyone so annoyed that I didn't round it up? Because she ran like 41.8 kilometers. Yeah. And people are like, oh, round it up. But like that's just how far she ran.
Yeah.
And like and back in the day, that's just how far you ran. So I bet so many people must have run like 9.8 or like 10.2.
Before Rick wraps us up, can I do my track session?
Your track session. So covered pyramids, good one. So far.
I like mixed. I mean, there are simple ones that you can do. If you're trying to run a fast mile, which is what I was always trying to do, things like 10, 400 meters. So one thing to think about is almost like race simulation. So if you're running, the rule is that you need to run more distance because you've got recoveries. So if you're running a mile, 1600 meters, then you might do 10 times 400 meters because that's 4K, so it's more than double the total distance you need to run, but you're getting a minute's recovery between each one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when you remove the recovery and go down in distance, you should have that endurance. Same if you're doing a 5K effort. There's some logic to say do 5x K, because that's 5K in total. But because you've got the recoveries in there, then you're not actually training the same system quite. So you might want to do 6 or 8x K with short recoveries. So you're essentially doing more than the distance. It doesn't all translate. You don't need to go and do more than a marathon or more than a half marathon on the track. But my favorite workouts were always mixed pace things. So I'd have done 4x2K, and 2K is 5 laps of the track. But the second and fourth ones might have been broken up into 400 meter efforts with actual recovery between them. So it kind of adds up to 4x2K. So I do 2K efforts solidly with no rest, a rest after that, and then 5 lots of 400 meters, and then back to 2K, and then 5 lots of 400 meters.
That's a lot.
That would have all been alternating paces around 5K and 10K pace.
That is quite, I remember we did a workout a while ago where it was, I can't remember what the rests were, but it was like 1 lap 10K pace, 1 lap 5K pace. Yeah. I think then rests and then one and then one.
Yeah.
Because like it's tricking your body. You're doing that first lap going, okay, this feels all right. And then you have to speed up for the second lap.
Yeah. And every time you do something faster, then you go back to, so actually another session that I love is you do 1K at your 5K pace.
Mm-hmm.
And then short recovery, so about 90 seconds recovery, and then 400 meters hard, like your mile pace. And this is a 5K workout, basically.
Yeah.
And you do that 4 times in total. You have 3 minutes recovery between sets. So it's K, 400, 4 lots of that in total.
Yeah.
And the K is the hard endurance part of that, where you're running at your 5K pace, and it's tough to do that. But then when you do the hard 400 meter effort and then go back to do the 1K effort, yes, it feels long,
great.
But the pace feels quite like... And also this is where I think jog recoveries come into it.
Yeah.
Because you'll accumulate a lot of lactate, you get really heavy legs in those faster efforts. So if you do only walk, it's quite hard to clear that out, and your legs just feel so heavy when you start running again. But if you are doing a reasonable jog, it doesn't have to be fast, for that 3 minutes, then when you go back into the K effort, then you're a little bit more ready to go. The pace feels easy, but your legs feel heavy from the speed. And then what you were talking about earlier at the end of that pyramids, when it comes down to that last set of that, you are running your fastest effort, hopefully, of that final 400 meters on really tired, fatigued legs, like coming through, hearing the bell on the track in the 5K.
Oh, that feels good, doesn't it, when you hear the bell?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really associate track running with heavy legs, to be honest with you. I just go to the track, do the mile test, 4 laps, have a sandwich.
Have a sandwich. What's in your sandwich?
Your last time.
Bacon sandwich and a ginger shot.
Your last time on the track would have been the pizza mile, wouldn't it?
Oh, God, that was awful. Yeah. That's the worst video we've ever made.
Oh, I love that one. I want to do that again this year.
One
Not
day,
with pizza.
I'll tell you something that I did on that pizza bar.
Oh, I can't wait for this. Does
I
this have to be off microphone?
You cheated.
One day I'll tell
did
you.
Did you cheat?
One day I'll
he
tell
definitely
you.
Cheated.
Was it
anyway,
you?
Anyway,
there was pizza on the floor at the.
One day I'll tell
was
you.
It you?
Oh anyway,
my goodness,
we've got news.
So cross.
So
did you put it down your trousers? Right, well,
one day.
Email in podcast@therunningchannel.com if you want to know what did Rick do with his pizza? Have a guess. You're listening to the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we've got your questions. But first, there's a lot of news that happened over the weekend. So let's dive in.
Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite shoes. Now, at The Running Channel, we bang on all the time about how if you want to run fast, you need to run slow. I'm talking about the 80-20 rule.
Yes, you need to do the vast majority of your training at an easier or steadier pace. And you need an everyday pair of running shoes that you trust to do that. And the Infinite Elite has brand new cushioning technology in the form of Under Armour's Hover Plus. So that's designed to support you for the whole of even your longest runs with extra cushioning and energy return. So that's what this is all about.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.
Okay, news time. Sarah, you wanted to go first.
I just want to give a shout out to our very own Mo, who went out and ran Tokyo Marathon over the weekend. Did so, so well. He's been battling injury. So this was very much he wasn't even sure throughout a lot of this training block whether he could do it. And he did do it. So huge, huge well done, Mo.
Yeah, amazing cultural
well
experience
done,
to be out there.
Yeah.
Well done, Mountain Goat.
Yeah, incredible effort. On a very different piece of news from me, it's very excitingly for me been the World Indoor Athletics Championships this weekend in Glasgow. Yeah. We're not going to dive into too many results. I'm particularly biased towards Josh Kerr as a 1500 meter runner winning the 3000 meter world title, which was an amazing race. And he looked totally in control as well. It sort of was never in doubt, which is what was exciting for me. But I've got a quiz for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh,
from the World Indoors. So Great Britain and Northern Ireland finished joint fifth in the medal table.
Uh-huh.
So which countries do you think
were
the other... So there's five countries in front of Great Britain, or what, you know, one of them joint.
Yeah.
Joint fifth. So what would your picks be?
France.
Nope. One of them's really obvious.
US.
Powerhouse of track and field, the USA.
China.
Were top. They were not.
Jamaica.
Nope. So these are other countries, definitely Jamaica is who I would guess from, say, if you were at the Olympics and so on. The indoors is different. There are different events. It's also in March, so not everybody is ready to compete. So you'll see a slightly different representation of countries there. But yeah, we've got the US in first and the
Norway?
UK. Norway are a bit of a powerhouse in running at the moment, but they didn't make the top five.
Oh, this is hard.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Ingebrigtsen.
Ingebrigtsen didn't run.
Oh.
So yeah, that's ruined it. But Carsten Vorholm did.
Australia?
Nope.
New Zealand?
Yes, which is really unexpected. New Zealand came third. So they got two golds, two silvers.
Right, so we've got one.
So unexpected gold in the men's 1500, which I was really excited about.
So we've got two. We've got two of the four.
Two left.
You've got three left because Great Britain were joint fifth.
Right.
We were joint.
Denmark.
Nope. Think about a powerhouse.
Spain.
Powerhouse of distance running.
Ethiopia.
Yes.
Three.
Ethiopia were joint fifth with Great Britain.
Okay, so we've got two more to get.
Two more to get, yeah. And one of your favourite athletes is from this other country. Sarah. I'm pointing at Sarah here.
Kenya?
You Femke Bol.
Yes, Femke Bol is from? she runs in orange.
Orange.
The Netherlands.
Yes, the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Four. Okay, so we got one more to guess.
Yeah.
Canada?
Nope. No one was there from Tim Hortons.
No one was there from Tim representing Tim. Tim Bits, not for sale.
This is a slightly unexpected one. Pretty close to the Netherlands. Pretty close to the Netherlands geographically.
Austria?
Nope. Closer.
Germany?
No. How's your geography?
I'm not even getting
involved
in
the
Eurostar. Geography. Amsterdam. No,
that's in the Netherlands.
Belgium.
Yes. Belgium was second in the medal
table.
Yeah. Wow.
That is all very unexpected.
Yeah, they won the men's 400 meters individual and also they won the men's 4x4 being America. So yeah, there we go.
Good quiz. Enjoyed
very
that.
Good
very
quiz.
Good quiz.
Enjoyed
more quizzes,
that.
Please.
We should do that again for the Olympics.
Yeah.
Right, and now, Rick, questions.
Hello, Stephen from Glasgow. My question is about fitting park run into a running plan. What a great question, because so many people try to do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Have you any thoughts on how to make it work? The context I have in mind is I'm training for a 10K and then a half marathon. I can't help but go flat out in the park run. I mean, this is standard practice, isn't it? I feel like. Should I be looking to do some slow tempo runs at park run or do it less often? The running plan doesn't have a flat out 5K every week, but I feel compelled to go. What do I do? I think that's a great question because loads of people do turn up. But a lot of people come to park run and will have run there and run before. So it's kind of like the middle slot of that training day.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I would say if you want to go every week, I don't think you should do it as a flat out. But if you can build it into what's your easy run for that week, could you make it more of like a social run, or what's your long run for that week? Could you run there, do the park run, and then run back?
Yeah, do something that tires you out beforehand, so it sort of stops you from being able to run quite as flat out as you could before. We actually, bear in mind, I was only training for 5K and below, really. But I wanted to be fit for 5K and 10K. We would fairly regularly run a park run. So bear in mind, for anyone listening, this is at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
9:30 in Scotland.
Yeah, and different times all over the world, actually. Roughly 9 o'clock, thanks, Rick.
8 a.m. in Melbourne.
Yeah.
9:30 in Northern Ireland, I think.
Okay, great. I love doing this with you too.
Saturday morning.
So a free...
Pre-midday.
A free 5K event where you get a finishing time. And there's lots of other people show up at the same time. We would have run it where we did a full warm-up. So I'd have run 2 or 3 miles as an easy jog warm-up, then done my drills and so on.
Yeah.
Then I would have run park run hard. So 5K, hard effort. Then I'd have taken 3 to 5 minutes of recovery. Mm-hmm. And then I'd have done another full park run. So another 5K at tempo or threshold.
3 to 5 minutes recovery. Yeah. I hope your ticket counters are on form that day. Sometimes the queues.
I
had the luxury of being towards the front of the of that park run.
Of course you did.
Sorry, Rick.
Of course you did.
Sorry, Rick.
Yeah. So
it could go straight up.
10-minute wait.
I was just envisaging you in like full singlet and shorts, like jogging on the spot in the funnel with your token. Being like, 20 seconds.
we'd whiz straight through. But that would mean that I'd run the first one hard, like close to 14 minutes probably, like 14 and a half minutes. And then the second one would be more like 17 and a half minutes or 16 to 17
well
minutes.
Chilled that second one.
See there's quite a big difference.
Yeah, quite a big difference. Yeah. No, I think that's good advice, actually.
Let us know what you do, Stephen.
Just out of interest, how many park runs have you two done?
Fewer than you.
50-something, 52,
I think
53?
I've done about 30.
Okay, interesting.
How many have you done?
One thing I'm better at you two.
One.
I think I've done 80.
That and cheating at the pizza
mall. I think I've done 80. What did you just say?
Sorry, what?
Cheating
Get
at the pizza
Get back to the library,
mall.
You muppet.
Oh, he's so cross. He's so cross.
What a comeback. Woo! Heating up in here, guys.
Careful.
Back to the library.
The next question is from
muppet.
Justin from Australia, but I read it really quickly and thought it said jamming.
Podcast Ben, yeah.
And I thought he'd emailed him, but he hasn't.
Oh, hey, Podcast Ben.
Is he running at the moment? Is he running? I think he is.
Yeah, I think he is. He sends us his updates each weekend as like his favourite bits of the podcast.
Aww. What are you loving so far, Ben?
Yeah, let us know.
Also, night, Dawn.
Dawn's made it this far through.
No, Dawn's fast asleep.
I have a question about long runs. How do you warm up? Do you run straight away after doing dynamic stretches and drills, or do you run a 1 to 2 kilometer warm-up jog before the actual long run? No.
Mm-mm.
If you're doing a long run, you don't need to do a warm-up run to do the long run.
I mean, I think being like sticklers for what you could do, yes, the ideal world is always to do a very, very gentle jog and then some dynamic activations. Mm-hmm. Generally what I would do, because if you are going to go and run 20 or 30K, I just couldn't face doing the extra stuff.
Yeah.
Is I'd get up and I would do some gentle activations, whether that might be glute activations or clamshell movements or things.
What's a glute activation?
So you'd like lie on your side with your knees slightly bent and then kind of doing what I've referred to as like a clamshell open. So you move the top knee. Yeah, like Sarah's demonstrating very elegantly.
I think I've got like a sleeping foam that does that. You know, these.
You can't do activations while you're asleep.
You know, one of those things that you sleep, go in between your legs when
you
sleep.
Yes.
That looks like it. Yeah.
Yeah, but then you have to actually move your leg.
Yeah. Or crab walks with a band around your knees, that sort of stuff. I would try and do that maybe in the house or outside the front of my house before then starting the run. So I would be saying I wouldn't do any aggressive drills for a long run because I'm not running fast. Usually the really fast activation drills I would save for when I've done 2 or 3 mile warm-up.
I see.
Proper dynamic drills, then going into a hard workout. Whereas a long run, I would do some activations before going out of the house.
Or how do you feel about doing those kind of dynamic drills in front of your neighbours?
Oh my God, it's so embarrassing, but you have to do it.
You have to do it in front of your neighbours.
Oh my gosh, yeah. this was genuinely tragic. So I tend to do a dog walk as my like 1 to 2K warm up, okay, just to get my legs moving, and then I'll go out. This long run this weekend, I walked, so like my flat, there's a big car park outside of it. So I was walking through the car park and then I was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to do a few lunges, a few like leg sweeps.
Yeah.
I do a leg sweep as I'm just walking out of the car park. I turn to my right. I'm walking past a window, make direct eye contact. It's someone's bedroom and they were getting changed. Oh. And I was like,
I thought you were going to say something else.
Oh, good. Yeah, yeah. Good.
Oh, well, so that was great fun. Yeah, this is a colour of perf. Yeah.
You heard it here first.
She's a bit.
Rick's a cheat. Sarah's a perv.
There we go.
What are you?
What are you? A nerd.
I'll take it.
Hey, listen, thanks for spending the last 40 minutes with me.
Oh, that's so,
that was so
nice.
Passive aggressive.
Hey, I tell you what, if you'd shotted that ginger thing a bit quicker, it would have been 30 yeah, or even under 30. Yeah.
Well, the good news is they won't be for sale for the next 10 weeks. So, you know, that'll be
no one will be able to get them.
No one
and another cracking Rick Kelsey fact to finish off the week.
Wonderful.
Before we go.
Oh yeah, quick favour, go on.
I still haven't got a lot of debates going on in the email. So sock, sock, shoe, shoe went down very well last week, but we need some more of those. So is there anything that's annoying you that, you know, it's a question that you'd want to ask your running pal? Send it in, podcast@therunningchannel.com. What's better, ginger shots or beetroot shots? We can get Rick to do it.
Shorts over tights. Watch on your left wrist or your right wrist.
Oh.
People who have the guidance on during a race, you know, and it's like you can hear what their pace is, you know, and it's being shouted out at you.
Lap one, five, 42. Constant.
Per like, kilometer.
And you do you do the voices?
Me, that was actually quite good.
That was quite good.
Lap three.
Anyway.
Well, that was a bit of a damp squib of an ending. On that note, we'll see you next week on the Running Channel podcast.
Goodbye.
This episode was brought to you by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite everyday running shoe, which has a focus on both comfort and endurance. So an ultra springy, responsive feel that protects your legs and keeps them feeling fresh, which is what Jess has been putting to the test as she's been training for over the last 12 weeks for taking on her ultimate ever 10K. And she's been focused on consistency. So being able to show up with those fresh legs every day and every week in order to put in the work and the recovery that she needs to do to run her best.
If you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.